Hello again, and welcome to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 116. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. This week, you'll meet Pilar Zuniga, owner of Gorgeous and Green, a Berkeley-based boutique and eco-floral design studio. Pilar started Gorgeous and Green nearly 6 years ago after she discovered how hard it was to plan her own sustainably minded wedding. Her business has expanded from only handling wedding and events to a charming storefront on College Avenue in Berkeley. There you can find a full-service floral and gift shop that carries uncommon goods, all curated by Pilar. They include things like vintage jewelry, locally made gifts, recycled paper stationery, organic bath and beauty products, and of course, local and sustainably grown flowers. Gorgeous and Green recently won the Best of Berkeley 2013 award in the florist category. For anyone interested in learning how a brick-and-mortar retail flower shop can make it in today's era of mass merchandising and big box stores, you'll want to join my conversation with Pilar. She is blazing a new trail and is the true definition of a local florist. She's someone who goes the full distance to source from American flower farms near her store. You can see beautiful photos of Pilar and her work on my website, deborahprinzing.com, and you'll follow links to Gorgeous and Green's e-store and blog. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. It's great to be on the line with this week's guest, Pilar Zuniga. And Pilar is the owner of Gorgeous and Green Events in Berkeley, California. Hello.
Hi there.
Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you.
Pilar, you have come on my radar. We've never met in person, but I follow your website and your blog, and I'm so impressed with your business. You won the Best Florist in Berkeley this year, I understand.
Yeah, I did. That was kind of a surprise.
Oh, that's neat. Probably well-deserved.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about your business. Obviously, you have a green focus with a wonderful title like that. You have. Tell me about your business and also your shop.
All right. So, basically, I started Gorgeous and Green Events. Now I just call it Gorgeous and Green because we have the boutique as well. But I started the event company, probably about 6 years ago. And originally, I was really concerned about the lack of kind of green and sustainable options, specifically for weddings and events. And having planned my own wedding, and I was looking for florists who are willing to work within my mindset and really think locally and avoid things like floral foam and, you know, toxic sprays and flowers grown out of the country. And also thinking about things like recycled goods or just how to be eco-friendly within the wedding and event setting when it comes to gifts, when it comes to reusing, whether it's dresses or, you know, location, just all of those kinds of things. So because I was doing so much research for my own wedding, I was like, you know what?
There's a need. Yeah. You found a need there, right?
There's a need, and there's a lack of people who are willing to kind of think about this. So I had a full-time job at the time, and I just started the event business and trying to help other people plan and ultimately decorate their events in a way that was eco-friendly. But also I gave them hints as far as other things, whether it was food or gifts or things like that. So I figured out that I enjoyed the flower part too. I kind of honed into my creativity a little bit, and I kind of got sucked in, sucked out of my old job and sucked into Gorgeous and Green a little bit.
Well, flowers have a way of doing that to people.
Yeah.
What, your background is in art though, right?
Yeah, I've always been an artist from a young age, and I've always taken art classes, a lot of painting. I think I was a painter first, and I've done just about everything, sewing, ceramics, printmaking. but jewelry making, but painting is kind of my focus. And I think that's helped me a lot actually with flowers.
Oh, absolutely. Because you already had this sensibility toward proportion and color and scale and composition, and that all shows up in your arrangements.
Yeah.
So at what point did you open the boutique in Berkeley?
Well, I actually opened the boutique when after, so I decided, I had been talking with my husband actually quite a bit about my lack of fire for my full-time job. And he said, well, why don't you open a shop? You always talked about opening a shop. And I thought, well, yeah, I could mend these two ideas together, get Gorgeous mm-hmm. and Green Events, and connect it with a boutique that offered the same idea, which was a very sustainable, eco-friendly look at maybe gifts, still do events, and of course do flower design. So I opened this boutique that was sort of a meld of all those ideas. Some people were confused by it, but I think that it actually works. And now I've had the boutique almost 4 years, and we recently moved to a kind of fancier location this past year. So it's on the move, and yeah, it's been a good 4 years of doing boutique work and eco-friendly gifts, but also a lot of the floral design.
Well, it sounds like you really, people come to you for maybe this whole category of green wedding. And do you think, obviously, Berkeley has a reputation of being, you know, very organic and green focused, but do you feel like this is something that you've had to kind of define and invent sort of the category for people to wrap their minds around? Or is it this been happening in a sort of organic way over the last decade or so?
You know, it has been happening. I think Berkeley is, when everybody calls me from out of state, for example, to order an arrangement, they're always like, oh, you're in the best place, Berkeley. Of course it would be Berkeley.
That's great.
And I think, yes, I think there is definitely a mindset already here. People understand what I'm getting at. People also are willing to test me here. So they may, you know, they say, well, what exactly do you mean? You know, and where exactly are you getting your flowers? So that's really important. I think that is good, because we, you know, I try my best. I've basically built this business to be as sustainable as I can. Of course, there's always going to be room for improvement, but it's nice to be like, people are really concerned to the point where they say, oh, well, what about that tissue paper that you're wrapping? And I'm like, yes, it's 100% recycled. I can say that. I've done my...
Wow. You know, yeah. So you have kind of a highly informed customer base, maybe other than more informed than maybe designers or florists in other parts of the country.
Yes, for sure. So I have to keep my wits about me. But at the same time, we get a lot of visitors. I mean, this is Berkeley. We have UC Berkeley, which has a lot of out-of-state folks, which has people from all over the state, not just
sure.
the area. So we get a lot of people who don't really understand all of it, who maybe still need to be educated. So we're finding ourselves educating on a daily basis.
And do you do that mainly by just talking with customers, or do you have signage? How are you kind of bringing people up to speed about your sourcing choices?
The website is one, and that's kind of the basic thing for people who find me online. But I think in store, it's conversations. You know, we have signage everywhere. People don't always read the signs. So we have these conversations with people and really explain, you know, like, I have a big sign that says all our flowers are locally grown, and we try to get local organics when available. And so, like, really explaining to them and also letting them know the pitfalls of that. Like, we can't always get organics. We can't always get peonies, right?
Right.
And that's a big one, especially for weddings. And just always having those conversations and sometimes bumming people out a little bit, and sometimes just being, you know, I think, truthful about what that actually means.
Absolutely. And I can imagine that because you're a creative person, you have a solution for the inevitable disappointment when someone finds out that a particular flower that they absolutely want out of season just simply isn't available domestically.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you know, people get may get stuck on this idea of a particular flower or a particular item, but really, if you can create beauty using, you know, all kinds of variations, then you can say, look, this is a beautiful example of something I created. Had did not have that flower or did not use whatever, but right. How great it still came out. And I think people are, you know, they're like, oh yeah, you know, as long as somebody is able to really create beauty, I think that no matter what, people are going to be able to see it and say, you know what, I just want it to look beautiful.
I agree with you. And I think that you are among a small group of pioneering florists who are taking this philosophy of education. And because I hear from florists who say, well, I don't want to say no to that bride who definitely wants the white hydrangea in January. And, you know, that's of course, I understand that you want to have the customer service, but there's that other philosophy that you're alluding to, which is, well, that bride just simply doesn't know what her options are. She's only looking at what she sees in the magazines or, you know, online, you know, on Pinterest or something. And she's not thinking about seasonality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it really helps to be like, and, you know, you also have to take, unfortunately, you have to kind of say, this is my standpoint, and you have to stay there. And mm-hmm. there may be some people who move and go to another person, but eventually, there are going to be people who are going to seek you out specifically because you're standing there and you're not moving.
That is music to my ears, Pilar. I really admire you for that. What have you developed in terms of your sources? I mean, are you working directly with flower farmers, or are you buying at the San Francisco flower market, or how do you bring flowers in from your various sources?
That's a good question. So I do go to the market. I go to the market 3 days a week because I also believe that it's really important to have really fresh flowers.
Sure.
What I've done, and it takes time, is, well, and also we're lucky here, we have a lot of local growers.
Right.
What I've done is I've cultivated relationships with the actual growers who are selling their own stuff. Some of them sell stuff from elsewhere. So it's really about being able to say, hey, what is actually coming from your farm?
Right.
And buying that stuff from them. Or saying, uh-huh. Or sometimes they buy from other local farms. So just you really have to do your homework. And part of that is developing relationships with people and also knowing who not to go to. I'd say the majority of the folks who sell at the market are not local growers. So really be right. Okay also by passing the stands that have really gorgeous flowers from out of country or out of state and going to the places that you know you can get locally grown flowers and just being able to do that on a consistent basis, you know.
Right.
And then also I did a lot of research trying to find local organic growers, and that's been a lot harder.
Sure.
They're small scale because honestly, there have been a couple that I've worked with in the past who stopped growing local organic flowers. It was just too much work.
No, I hear that. I hear that it's very challenging just to become certified organic as a small flower farmer. You might have those practices, but the hoops you have to jump through to get the certification is sort of punitive.
Yeah, it's really difficult. So I think, you know, doing that research again and then being willing to try people out and see, you know, not everybody's going to grow great stuff. And, you know, it's just, it is a lot of work. It's kind of a hassle sometimes.
But you're so much more passionate about it than that boring desk job that your husband let you leave.
I work so much more, but no, I really enjoy it. And it feels good to be supporting. I mean, it honestly feels good to support these people who are also trying to make an effort to be sustainable and who are often small time. So
yeah.
I can say, oh, this came from this grower. You know, we have a couple growers who are just starting out very small, and I have these conversations with them, and I can say, you know, I buy from them and you are supporting them directly.
Wow. Right. That's you're translating the story of that farmer to the customer.
Yeah.
And for you to buy a couple $100 worth of flowers for the shop from one small farmer makes a huge difference for them, I'm sure, than you know, if they were just selling at a farmer's market, it might not be that kind of sale in one transaction. So, Pilar, I have to tell my listeners the reason that you even got on my radar. You know, of course, all of us looking for information are on the web doing searches. And I have been concerned for 5 or 6 years in the course of time that I've been interviewing floral designers who have an eco focus. I've become concerned about the use of the florist foam, and that, you know, more and more I keep hearing, you know, how unsafe it is for the planet and for humans. And every single time I would do an internet search for information about florist opinions of this product, your blog post would show up. And I was like, who is this woman? And I finally dug deeper into all of your blog posts, and you've written very intelligently and not with just, you know, emotions, but with facts that you've done research on about why you don't use the green foam that maybe many people are used to having seen from wire service bouquets. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that integrated into your business philosophy?
I think, you know, I don't even know how I figured it out. I think it was when I was doing research on my wedding, maybe.
So that was 5 or 6 years ago then.
Yeah, I started researching stuff in 2006. I came across, I always wondered what it was. And my aunt was a florist when I was a small kid growing up, and I would help her, and she would always have these blocks of green foam hanging out in buckets, soaking in water. Mm-hmm. And I remember vividly, like, playing with it, even eating it.
Oh my gosh. Where was this? Was this in California?
This was in San Diego.
And, oh my goodness.
You know, she would cut it, and it was kind of great, like a green dust that right. everywhere. And so I really remember that stuff being used all the time. She would use it for just about everything that you could use it for. And I just looked it up and tried to figure out what it was. And I remember at the time I was able to get the fact sheet online, the MSDS fact sheet. And it said basically that it had these chemicals in it
right.
that were linked to cancer. And it also said things like you shouldn't touch it for prolonged periods of time. You shouldn't inhale the dust or ingest it. And I remember thinking, well, I remember eating it. I remember inhaling it. And I was just a kid hanging around, you know.
Wow, right.
Being a florist every single day. So so that was a big red flag to me. And
right.
I wanted to let people know. So I did a blog post early on, you know, when people are just starting with their blogs. And some people got back to me and were saying, oh, yeah, you know, thank you so much. I've been having difficulties with my health, and they just don't know what it is. Somebody else said, yeah, I have these high amounts of formaldehyde in my blood, and we think that it might be related to the, you know, the floral foam and the other sprays that we use in the shop to make the flowers look pretty. And then I started to get emails from people saying the link doesn't work anymore.
Interesting.
I went and looked, and I was like, you're right. They have taken it off. I think I had driven too much traffic to it.
Oh, and do you think that was posted by the MDS, like agency or whatever, right?
It was, so you can ask for the, it doesn't usually come in the boxes, the different kinds of foam. You can ask for the MSDS fact sheet, and they used to have it online, the different manufacturers and the kind of the major manufacturer used to have it online, so you could find their products and find the fact sheet online.
I see. Oh, MSDS, Material Safety Data Sheet. Yeah. That's the acronym. Okay.
Yeah. So that kind of, it basically just gives you an overview, and it's actually not super detailed, but it gives you just a slight hint at what might be a risk in relation right. to what's going on with that product, and it kind of tells you what it's made of. So they had taken it off online, and they had, you know, this one manufacturer, and said, oh, if you really want it, you can call us or send us a letter. And I thought, well, don't make it harder for people. What are you doing? So somehow I got my hands on it and I copied it and I pasted it right into my blog post. I thought, you know what, it's like 10 pages long or whatever, but I'm going to just do that because so many people were asking for it and were concerned that it was really hard to get to. So, yeah, I just tried to continue that. I did get somebody from one of the big manufacturers saying that they were actually going to try to come up with biodegradable. But I said, well, will it still have hazards? You know, it may biodegrade, but
right.
It'd be harmful to breathe in, and they didn't get back to me. So
I know it's tough, and I've been at some industry events where I've heard from designers who basically can't wean themselves from the foam, who also have anecdotally said, well, it's company A or company B has said they're doing the research to create, you know, something that's less harmful. They don't use those terms, obviously. They say more biodegradable or lower, you know, lower percentage of chemical usage. But obviously you're designing beautiful arrangements without foam. So maybe the solution is the road you're taking, which is educating people about why you don't use it and showing them that your techniques are obviously greener and creating just as beautiful or more beautiful floral arrangements.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I did it out of necessity. I basically have never had to rely on floral foam for any of my arrangements. And so what that's done is I don't know what I could do. You know, I can't imagine. I mean, I have an idea. I know that there are certain things I cannot do. I tell brides I cannot make a round ball completely round. You know, I can get most of it round, and then there's going to be some stems hanging up.
Right.
You know, and that's just where I am. I can do a lot of really cool stuff, but there are some stuff like, you know, I can't get the flowers to live outside of a vase for 2 days. There's stuff I can't do, but at the same time, I've kind of just resigned myself to the fact that, like, this is, again, where I'm going to stand. And I really, like, is it just bad for the environment?
Right.
I really don't want to put myself in the position or any of my staff in the position where we're putting our health, you know, at risk, with that stuff. Like,
absolutely.
There's already enough stuff that we have to deal with, as far as if a local flower grower is spraying, you know, we are still going to be coming into contact with maybe smaller amounts of pesticides, but still pesticides. And so I think just reducing your risk, it's just, you know, it's just, there's nothing that's more important than somebody's health.
Absolutely.
And secondly, the environment. So I think that, it's kind of a no-brainer for me. And I think that there are lots of options and you can still make beautiful things. And people have been doing that for so long. Floral foam has only been around for, you know, maybe 50 years or so. But people have been working with flowers for hundreds of years. And they've come up with beauty that has been painted and that is part of kind of our history of beauty and art. And so why not just go back to that, you know?
Absolutely. Well, Pilar, we'll put some photos and links on my show notes so people can see your work. But maybe you could just describe what techniques you are employing that, you know, are get around, like kind of a do around, so you're not having to rely on foam as the basis for an arrangement.
I mean, first and foremost, you pick a good vase.
Yeah.
That's the easiest tool is looking for a vase that will allow you to create, usually with a smaller opening, you know, or some kind of an opening that may be narrow, that so you don't have to rely on foam to keep the flowers standing up straight.
Got it.
I think that that's probably the easiest thing. And really, honestly, is not a big deal. You just start to realize that, oh, this is just going to make it that much easier to make a beautiful arrangement. Also just using branches and greenery in the arrangement that are going to create a great lattice work. You know, you maybe start with those things first, get kind of, you know, cross them over each other in the vase itself. So you've got like holes almost, to then plug in your flowers, and the branches and the greens help the flowers stick up in the place that you would want. Another thing that we do all the time is we tie. We constantly tie our arrangements. And it does a couple of things. One, it keeps the flowers in the place that we want them. But it also allows the person who's getting them to take those flowers home, and they can change the water so easily. They pull
the
arrangement out, they change the water, clean the vase, and then put the flowers right back in. So I think that that is super, super easy. You know, some flowers work better tied than others.
And sure.
You know, like things like winding with branches or willow inside, using wire to create sort of a nest or something that you can plug flowers in, or that will hold the arrangement in. We've used it a little bit, but a florist in actually the Seattle area had recommended using Excelsior to kind of hold flowers in place.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've used somewhat. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. And she, you know, it's not something for, say, 40 centerpieces for a wedding reception, but maybe for a single arrangement, right?
Yeah. But that can, you know, be helpful. And then what else? Oh, frogs, you know.
Yeah.
Frogs are kind of an old-time instrument, and they do create some beautiful pieces. Again, there, you know, there's certain styles that work better with a frog than others. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of different tools out there. And part of, honestly, part of being a good florist is having a lot of ability. Like,
right.
I mean, that's, you should be able to do lots of different things. And so.
Well, and people are coming to you for the gorgeous and green aesthetic, and for the work that you've, you know, had your name attached to. So you have this wonderful reputation for creating beautiful flowers. And on top of that, then the message of local flowers and green techniques, you know, you've got a wonderful message that consumers respond to, especially in your market. I think it hopefully that creeps across the rest of the country as well.
Yeah.
Well, so what do you have on the horizon for 2014? I looked at your online boutique, and you don't just sell flowers. You've got a lot of natural sort of aromatic or aromatherapy products and fun things that maybe are more for gifts. Is that in jewelry? I mean, are those the main emphases of your shop?
Yeah, the shop itself is kind of this weird little world of local fun things. A lot of it, you know, has this idea of either reusing. So we have jewelry that's made from vintage pieces, or just locally made organics. So we have some body products that are made locally with like all organic materials. We have like a perfume line that's locally made, that's all organic and essential oils. You know, recycled glass things made from wood, reclaimed wood, you know, just this idea of kind of the local market that also is thinking sustainably. So
you're sourcing from other artisans and craftspersons that you come across, or you've decided to cultivate their, you know, their product line in your shop.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And looking for people who are doing something that maybe, like, for example, terrariums are very big right now. And there are these hanging glass terrariums that you can buy. A lot of florists actually have them in their shops, but they're all blown. The glass is all blown in China, for example.
Right.
So a few years ago, I decided, you know what? I don't want to buy these, because they're coming from so far away, and I don't know that the people who are making it are getting the fair pay for it. So
right.
I would like to find some local artists who can blow terrariums for me. So I've got, I think, three or four different glass artists that I work with who are making glass, and we can create terrariums with them. And it just feels good to be able to say, hey, this wasn't made all the way over there. This was made, you know, right here in Berkeley. Or
wow.
So
that's a challenge. That takes back to your whole focus on research with finding local flowers. You're having to, you know, do all that legwork to find the artisans whose products are made with sustainable practices or with low carbon footprint or recycled materials. And it really underscores your brand. It seems completely compatible that you're doing that. I love hearing that.
Thank you.
Well, I think that what you're sharing is going to inspire not just consumers who listen to this podcast, but other florists who, and I hear from florists quite frequently. I've heard in the last 6 months, I've heard from people who said, okay, this 2014 is the year I'm going to wean myself from using foam, and mm-hmm. and I'm going to let my customers know, and I'm just changing my design aesthetic. And so you've got to be gratified to know that you're probably influencing some of these people in the same industry you're in, that they're seeing your success and realizing there's a positive benefit to giving that message to your customers.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that the more people do it, the more acceptable it's going to be. So, you know.
And maybe it will ultimately force the conventional florist products industry to find an organic alternative, not just a biodegradable one. I think that Constance Spry, back in the early part of the 1900s, was using moss, and mm-hmm. I guess that was nature's foam.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, and it's not just the foam, honestly, there's a lot of other weird toxic spray stuff and glues and other stuff that is constantly being used, and a lot of that stuff, like, it doesn't have all the information about the risks associated with it when you look at it. You know, you have to do your research. So,
okay. So, Pilar, that means you've never sprayed a hydrangea red or anything crazy like that.
No, we don't use any, you know, dyed flowers. We don't use any sprays, any paints, any lacquers for the flowers or the, you know, the leaves of plants. I think I bought some weird thing that said it was non-toxic, but that even confused me, and I gave it back. I bought it. I said I couldn't use it, so I'm just going to give it back to you.
Well, it's almost like, you know, colors not known to nature. If that's the case, then why are you using them? So I applaud you for keeping it organic and keeping it green.
Thank you.
Pilar, thank you so much. I look forward to meeting you in person, hopefully at the San Francisco Flower and Garden Show next year. And I really appreciate you taking the time to share your philosophy with the listeners of this podcast. I think it's really provocative that you're making a stand and sharing your research with the public through your blog. So I'll make sure to link to that as well.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Pilar and I just scratched the surface on a major issue that's going on right now in the floral world. And that's the concern she and I and so many others have about that green florist foam, the brick-shaped chunk that you often find stuck inside a vase when you receive a wire service arrangement or something from a local flower shop. Every single week, I hear from florists and designers who tell me they are weaning themselves off the product, which is made by a small group of manufacturers in the U.S. and abroad. These florists are eager to find alternative ways to stabilize their flower and foliage stems. And some of those techniques were discussed in our podcast. I will devote a future episode of the Slow Flowers podcast to more extensive information on this topic. In the meantime, visit my website for links to Pilar's blog posts about her investigation into the ugly side of the floral industry. And thank you for joining me in this episode of the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. Because of your support as a listener, we've had more than 3,000 downloads since July. and I thank you for taking the time to join my conversations with flower farmers, florists, and other notable floral experts. If you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. Until next week, please join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. The Slow Flowers Podcast is engineered and edited by Hannah Holtgertz. Learn more about her work at hhcreates.net.